A Revive Our Hearts listener wrote during the recent Titus 2 series about how God has challenged her to get involved with the next generation.
When I began listening to the Titus 2 study, I asked God, who could I possibly be a mentor to? I go to an inner city church in Minneapolis. A month ago, a sister at the church sent a message to some women asking for help teaching the teen girls in Sunday school class. I read the text and said, that's not me. I don't know how to relate to inner city girls. I grew up in the suburbs. I didn't start reading the Bible until I was 50. I can't imagine I could minister to these girls.
We have an obligation. We have a responsibility to get involved in the lives of these younger women. If they're not thinking straight, if they're not living godly lives, if they're not succeeding in their marriage and their parenting, we as older women have to ask ourselves, have we fulfilled our responsibility to train these younger women?
I continued to give myself excuses, but the Lord was having none of it. The Lord used the Titus study to stir me and convict me. I am now working with the girls. It's been just a couple weeks. I know there's nothing in me. I need only to be obedient and to let God use me as His vessel. Thank you so much for this ministry that I just discovered at the start of the Titus study. I am praying for His abundant blessing on your ministry and an outpouring of funding to continue the ministry.
When we study God's Word together here on Revive Our Hearts, it has a huge real-life effect on women of all generations. So if you've given to support this ministry, you're not just making a donation, you're making a difference in the lives of those teenage girls and their teacher in Minneapolis. Revive Our Hearts is facing some serious needs right now. Donations have been lower than we expected for the last several months, and we've been using reserve funds to cover the gap. At the same time, we need to be preparing for the coming summer months when donations are usually down. So we're trusting the Lord to provide $830,000 in donations here in the month of May. Would you be a part of helping to meet this faith goal? You can get more details on the need and the opportunity by visiting us at reviveourhearts.com. Again, that's reviveourhearts.com. Or you can give us a call at 1-800-569-5959. That's 1-800-569-5959. Thanks so much for doing your part as Revive Our Hearts helps women live out the beauty of the gospel.
This is the Revive Our Hearts podcast with Nancy DeMoss Walgamuth, author of Brokenness, The Heart God Revives, for Tuesday, May 2nd, 2017. Revive Our Hearts is a program for women, but this week's guest has written a book for husbands and dads about leading their families. But don't tune out. When we hear God's design for men to lead their families, it helps us better know how to encourage those leaders. Robert Walgamuth is Nancy's husband since about a year and a half ago. You probably know the story. Robert was married to Bobby Walgamuth and had two daughters. He took care of her through a multi-year battle with cancer until she went home to be with the Lord. He brings a lot of experience to his new book, Like the Shepherd. He and Nancy are here to talk about it.
Well, it's a joy to be talking this week with my husband. Well, actually, we talk every week. We talk every day. We talk throughout every day. But with our Revive Our Hearts listeners joining us for this conversation, honey, on a new book you've written, your 20-somethingeth?
Somethingeth.
Book.
Yes.
More than 20 books. And was it your first one that was called?
She Calls Me Daddy.
She Calls Me Daddy.
Written in 1996.
Written for dads of daughters. And
right.
That book is still available.
It is.
And so you've had a heart for family, for parenting, for marriage, and you've written a lot about both of these subjects. But I'm really thrilled about this latest book that you've written because I've learned so much more about God's ways in marriage. My calling now as a new wife of 18 months. From you and from being with you in the process of your writing this book. It's called Like the Shepherd, Leading Your Marriage with Love and Grace. And if you didn't get a chance to hear yesterday's program, I want to encourage you to go back and pick that up. This is a program that is going to be an encouragement, I believe, not only to women, but also to men. And if you think this is something that your husband would be interested in, be sure and let him know how he can access that at reviveourhearts.com. I think it's a book that will also be a blessing to both husbands and wives. And we suggested yesterday that with Father's Day coming up, you may want to get a copy for your husband or an adult son or son-in-law or a dad that you know would have a heart for growing in this whole idea of leading their marriage with love and grace. Now, we talked yesterday about this whole concept of a husband being a shepherd. And I just want to get this out of the way because I know somebody's thinking it. If the husband is the shepherd, that makes the wife a sheep. And for a lot of women, I'm not sure that's something they really want to be called. That's
I'm
not
sure you're right.
Necessarily a flattering concept.
Right.
So help us out for those where this may seem just like it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, of course. When the Bible was composed, it was back in the day when people were herdsmen and agriculturalists, farmers, fishermen. So that was the culture. You know, the industrial age hadn't happened yet. So the illustrations and so forth are in the context of those things. But it's interesting, Nancy, because the Bible calls everybody a sheep.
So not just wives.
Not just women. I mean, all we like sheep have gone astray. Jesus is the lamb who was slain. So we're in great company. No one is exempt from being called a sheep. And there is a reason for that. Sheep are really good at wandering away. And the first story in Luke chapter 15 is one that I talk about quite a bit in the book because the sheep lost his way. And he wasn't defiant. The prodigal son, that's a story also told in that chapter, you know, shook his fist in his daddy's face and said, "I am out of here." The sheep wasn't that way. The sheep didn't seem to be defiant. It just seemed to be easily distracted. One little tuft of grass here and a little tuft of grass over there, and suddenly he looks over his shoulder and he doesn't know where he is. So that's all of us. So the Bible is very clear that all of us have that tendency.
And one of the things I love that you talk about in this book is it's not just wives who are sheep and need to follow a human shepherd, but you challenge men, you challenge husbands, that you can't lead your wife well if you're not recognizing that you're a sheep in need of a shepherd and if you haven't learned how to follow our good shepherd.
One of the most important concepts in all of life is the idea of being an apprentice. I worked for a contractor all the way through college, and I learned how to do all the trades from masonry to electrical work to everything to carpentry by watching him do it. I could have read a manual. Back then we didn't have YouTube, but I learned how to do it by watching somebody who was an expert do it. And so that's the idea here. I am learning how to be a shepherd by being a sheep and having a shepherd. I talk about that a lot. So I have a greater capacity to be a good shepherd by watching my good shepherd and being an obedient sheep under his leadership. Then I know what it looks like. I've seen somebody else do it. I've experienced it from the good shepherd, capital G, capital S. And now I have some clues as to how to do it in my own home.
And that's one of the things, honey, that has been such an inspiration to me. It's no secret to our listeners that I'm a strong woman. I was single for 57 years. I had leadership and I had followship as well, but not in the way that I do now as a wife. And this could have been a rough or even impossible adjustment, humanly speaking, for me now to be in the role of a wife with a husband who has a vision for shepherding his wife. And the thing that has, besides God's word and God's ways, but that has inspired me at a human level is seeing how you daily, humbly, earnestly seek our good shepherd. You're following him. You're listening for his voice. You're up at the crack of dawn, before dawn, actually, most mornings, and in the Word and on your knees and listening for his voice and praying for our marriage and for the things that concern us together. So for me, it makes it a lot easier to follow your leadership, to trust your leadership, not because I have expectation that you will be a perfect husband any more than I am a perfect wife, but I know I can trust the Lord. I know we can trust the Lord, and that if you're listening to him, then God's going to be taking good care of us.
Even just as you're saying those words, I feel a sense of panic. I do, because I know what a sinful man I am. I know that without the grace of God and his mercy and his forgiveness, I don't have a chance.
But isn't that the point for all of us?
It is. Yes, of course it is. But you're saying these wonderful, kind things, and I'm grateful for them. And they're an encouragement to me, because it helps me to want to continue to do that and to be that man in your life. But I am so aware of my own sinfulness and my own inadequacy when it comes to doing anything right, to being obedient, to listening to the voice of my good shepherd as I lead you. So,
and I can't imagine that any husband who knows anything about God or himself doesn't have those same feelings. So my point is, a woman's trust, a wife's trust, ultimately is not in her husband to be all that he should be.
Yeah.
Because what husband is,
right,
what wife is, but our trust together is in the Lord, which is why we go back to what we said yesterday. Our song is, Savior, like a shepherd, lead us. Much we need thy tender care. And as we're looking to him, we can trust him to help us sort through these differences, the challenges that come from the shepherding relationship that we're engaged in here.
Right.
Now, let me go back to something really fundamental here, that when we talk about a husband being a shepherd who's leading his marriage with love and grace, that's important there. But this whole word leading, this whole concept, really in our culture, nothing could be more politically incorrect. And in fact, you had the experience of, as an agent, looking for a publisher who would be interested in publishing this book.
Right.
And you found out, I think to a little bit of our surprise, that a lot of Christian publishers didn't want to publish a book like that.
Didn't like the word leading. I had a publisher specifically call me, and I know these people. And I mean, I've been in this industry for 40 years. I know these people. Some of them have worked for me. And he was very apologetic, and he said, we took it to the publication committee, like we always do with proposals that come our way. And if you'd be willing to change the word leading to something else, then we'd talk about the possibility of publishing this book. But if you're stuck on leading, we can't work with you on this book. And let me say, and part of the reason why I wrote the book is to help explain. In fact, I can't wait to send him a copy of the book, because I believe with all my heart that the folks around the table who pushed back on leading would understand where I'm coming from and would look at the book and say, boy, I wish we had published that book. My hope is that it isn't what they thought it was going to be with the word leading there.
I'm so thankful that you had the opportunity to record an audio version of this book. And I would love for our listeners to just hear a segment of you reading a couple paragraphs that capture the heart of what you just said.
The call to lead your wife with love and grace is the call to be the kind of husband that draws your wife in, a tenderness and humble leadership that serves her well. It's the kind of confidence and humility that surgically dispels her anxieties and fears. It's headship that provides a safe place for her to moor her heart. As her husband, you have the opportunity to speak words into her life that remind her that you still value her, words that confirm that she still has the kind of beauty that drew you to her in the first place. You lavish her with words that nurture and water any dryness in her heart that comes from years of routine and sometimes thankless work. Day by day, you resolve to not grow weary of giving yourself for her. This is the kind of leader that I believe the Bible compels you and me to be.
Wow. And honey, I think that summarizes the heart of this book, the way that you describe leadership. And for women who may feel that the concept of their husband being the leader is uncomfortable, it's maybe it just doesn't fit in this culture, I'm saying, what woman who knows and loves Jesus would not be thrilled to have a husband who thinks and leads in that way?
Yeah. You know, this is a very important part of this conversation, Nancy, because you're right. I wrote this book for men, and by a large majority, the people who are listening to our voices right now are women. And let's say that many of them are married and have a husband. And so how do we make the transfer between this book being offered on the broadcast, let's say the wife orders it, and now she just opened the mailbox and here's this book and she's holding it in her hand. What's she going to do? And I've thought about that a lot. Let's say that you had something that you wanted to give me, but it wasn't a box of candy. It wasn't my favorite, whatever, dessert. It was something that's going to challenge me, right? So how do you do that? And I'm thinking about riding in the car. And let's pretend that we don't have GPS. And let's pretend that I'm going the wrong way. And you're sitting there and you're saying
in
to
our case, it would really be the opposite. But I'd be the one who has no clue where they're going.
This is an illustration, so go with me. Go with me on it. And so what are you going to do to get me back on track? I'm going south on 31, and I need to go north on 31. And how you tell me to go the other direction has everything to do with how I respond. So it's absolutely appropriate, I think, that women are listening to this broadcast, and they're looking at the possibility of getting this book for their husbands. The way they make the transfer between the book in their hands and their husband's hands is the way in which they describe what it is that they're giving to them. This isn't, you're a mess, you're upside down, you're a terrible leader, you're, you know, whatever, a miserable husband.
You really need this book.
But the way to lovingly tell him about what you've learned about this book and how much you'd love for him to hear the heart of a man written by a man.
That will be such an encouragement, I think, to husbands. Yeah, it's not going to load them down with guilt for how they're failing.
Right.
It's going to encourage them in what I think God wired into men to want to be and do.
Years ago, I published Tim LaHaye, who wrote many books, many successful books, including the Left Behind series. And so I had the joy of knowing Tim and his wife, Beverly. And Tim told me one time something that I've never forgotten, and as an agent, I tell every one of my clients, that a book is a long letter to one person. So the microphone is turned off. I am not preaching to a large crowd of men. I'm sitting back in the corner at Starbucks. He and I have just gotten a cup of coffee, and our coffee is on the table between us. And I'm leaning in, he's leaning toward me, and I'm opening my heart. That's what this book is. I'm not preaching. My finger's not pointed at him. If my finger's pointed anywhere, it's myself, letting him know how easy it is to drop the ball in this assignment. But this is in every way a one-on-one conversation. A book is a very intimate medium. And so the idea is that a woman is inviting me, if I can be so presumptuous, to sit down with her husband in a cup of coffee and open my heart about this idea of leading your marriage with love and grace.
And as we've said already, it's a book that's going to also challenge wives. Here's a woman who posted on the Like the Shepherd Facebook page, which we encourage our listeners to go and see what's on there that might be encouraging to them. But she said, though the image of wives as sheep was a little strange and an affront to my pride at first, it is biblical. And I'm committed to following my great shepherd in letting my husband lead. And then she said to you, Robert, thank you for treating this topic with such grace.
Oh, wow.
And that's what you do. You use a lot of illustrations I think guys especially will enjoy. You use humor in ways that make this book really accessible. You're very transparent. You share out of your own journey. And you don't write as someone who has at all
arrived.
Oh, I'm so glad.
You write as someone who is very much on the journey. In fact, a story I've heard you tell numerous times is about a bike trip that you took when you were in college and something called Riding on the Point.
Yes.
That taught you some lessons about marriage.
It did. It did. I rode along with 39 of my also ignorant friends who rode bicycles from San Francisco, California to New York City.
How many miles?
4,000. And we took no days off. We rode for 39 straight days, no days off. So if it rained, we'd find some gas station that had an overhang and we'd wait for the rain to stop. We had 3 10,000-foot passes coming out of the west. Mm-hmm. I passed a flatbed truck doing 60 miles an hour on a 28-pound bicycle with no guardrail on the shoulder.
No helmet?
No. This is bad.
Pre-helmet.
So, I mean, part of it was that I was 19 years old, and that's the kind of thing you do when you're 19. So in order to make it easier to pass this group of 40 men on bicycles, we broke up into groups of 5 and 6 men. And we rode a mile apart so a car could pass us mm-hmm. a bite at a time. So here's what I learned, here's what we learned, that when you ride the first rider in a group of 5 or 6 men, you have the job of opening a wedge of wind, right? And so that the riders behind you, and you wouldn't think that it's like this on a little bicycle, but it's true. The rider behind the first rider has an easier time mm-hmm. because he's drafting. That's a word mm-hmm. I didn't know before this, mm-hmm. but he's drafting. So when you're in front, you have the responsibility of opening this wedge of wind that the riders behind follow. And here's another thing about riding first. There's stuff on the road. You know, I don't mean to be gross, but dead animals or tire treads that come off a truck or a board or a stick or a stone. And so you call out to the riders behind you, you know, stone on the right, rubber on the left, you know, dead possum on the right. And what you're doing, you're alerting the riders behind you. And that is a really cool leadership metaphor. That it is more work, but you have the responsibility of keeping the other riders safe by paying attention. So, yes, I did learn a lot about leadership and about marriage, riding in this silly bicycle all these miles. So that is a metaphor for leadership that helped me understand this concept.
And now you've been doing this marriage thing for a lot of years, but you didn't start out in marriage in your early 20s, just getting all this, knowing all this, having it down. It's been a journey for you as it is for any husband or wife.
It has. And, you know, Bobby and I were in our 20s. We were kids. And so we sort of grew up together. Mm-hmm. And I learned the hard way that things like snap out of it don't work.
That's not a real leadership term
that
is effective.
No, it's not. It isn't.
Did you ever say that?
Get over it. Oh, yeah, I did. Sure, I didn't know. I mean, I was, can I say stupid? I was. Inexperienced, let's say. So, I mean, one of the metaphors that I use in the book, and it's probably as off-putting as sheep, is fishing and pretending that I'm out deep-sea fishing and we're 3 miles from shore and I realize that the guide forgot to bring test line that would be able to land a 150-pound fish. We only have 12-pound test line. And so our job is to land, again, forgive me if this is an insulting illustration, but to get a 150-pound marlin on the deck of the ship with a fishing line that could break if I yank too hard. And so, again, I think men love metaphors. We all love them, but because I think Jesus used parables to teach deep biblical truth. But the job as a husband is to win your wife, to woo her, to never stop wooing her. When you and I were dating, and I did what most young suitors do, and I was romantic, and I said romantic things on the phone. And
that you did.
I did. Okay. And so, Lynn, tell our friends listening what you asked me. Come on.
I did one day. I said, so you're a very romantic pursuer. Are you going to be like one of these guys who you pursue all through the courtship and then you get married and you have captured, you've won, and then you're not going to be this way anymore?
That's right. And I said, No, I promise. In fact, my daughters are in their 40s, and so I encourage you to ask them.
Yeah,
I'm not
did.
Boasting, but that's, I learned this from my mother. Okay, so I'm a son. Your listeners are women, and they have sons.
Mm-hmm.
And the mother of a son can teach her son how to be a great husband by demonstrating to him how to be gentle, how to be kind.
Tender.
How to be tender, how to encourage. My mother was unbelievable. I how many times have I said, I only wish you could have met Grace.
Mm.
When I spoke at her funeral, I said, her parents named her Grace. How did they know? So a woman can teach her son how to be a great, tender, gentle, humble husband by the way she treats him as her son.
Robert Wolgemuth and his wife Nancy have been talking about ways we as moms can encourage our sons to lead like Jesus. He encourages men to lead that way in his new book, Like the Shepherd. And Nancy, this would be a great gift leading up to Father's Day.
Yeah, it sure would, Leslie. And we'd like to send you a copy when you support Revive Our Hearts with a gift of any amount this week. And when you make a gift, you'll not only be getting Robert's book, you'll also be supporting the ministry at a critical time. Donations to the ministry have been lower than expected in the last 6 months, and we've been using some emergency funds to cover that gap. But obviously, that's not something we can sustain for very long. And at the same time, we're preparing for the summer months when donations are usually a bit lower. Now, May is the end of our fiscal year when we wrap up our accounting and set our new budgets. And we're praying for the biggest fiscal year-end goal that we've ever set, $830,000 during the month of May. If we fall short of meeting that goal, our team's going to have some serious discussions about what significant cuts to make in our outreaches. So if you'd like to have a part in helping us to meet that goal, you can call us at 1-800-569-5959. That's 1-800-569-5959. Or you can visit us at reviveourhearts.com. And when you make your gift, be sure to ask for a copy of Robert's book, Like the Shepherd. Now, Robert will be back with us tomorrow, and we're going to talk about stink bugs and what they've meant in our marriage. Please be here tomorrow for Revive Our Hearts.
Revive Our Hearts with Nancy DeMoss Wolgemuth is an outreach of Life Action Ministries.